DNA tests were new, and the one that Jobs took was done at UCLA. I had read about DNA testing, and I was happy to do it to get things settled, he said. The results were pretty dispositive. Probability of paternity is 94.41%, the report read. The California courts ordered Jobs to start paying $385 a month in child support, sign an agreement admitting paternity, and reimburse the county $5,856 in back welfare payments. He was given visitation rights, but for a long time didn't exercise them. Even then, Jobs continued at times to warp the reality around him. He finally told us on the board, Arthur Rock recalled, but he kept insisting that there was a large probability that he wasn't the father. He was delusional. He told a reporter for Time, Michael Moritz, that when you analyze the statistics, it was clear that 28% of the male population in the United States could be the father. It was not only a false claim, but an odd one. Worse yet, when Chris Ann Brennan later heard what he said, she mistakenly thought that Jobs was hyperbolically claiming that she might have slept with 28% of the men in the United States. He was trying to paint me as a slut or a whore, she recalled. He spun the whore image onto me in order to not take responsibility. Years later, Jobs was remorseful for the way he behaved, one of the few times in his life he admitted as much. I wish I had handled it differently. I could not see myself as a father then, so I didn't face up to it. But when the test results showed she was my daughter, it's not true that I doubted it. I agreed to support her until she was 18 and give some money to Chris Ann as well. I found a house in Palo Alto and fixed it up and let them live there rent-free. Her mother found her great schools, which I paid for. I tried to do the right thing, but if I could do it over, I would do a better job. Once the case was resolved, Jobs began to move on with his life. Maturing in some respects, though not all. He put aside drugs, eased away from being a strict vegan, and cut back the time he spent on Zen retreats. He began getting stylish haircuts and buying suits and shirts from the upscale San Francisco haberdashery Wilkes Bashford. And he settled into a serious relationship with one of Regis McKenna's employees, a beautiful Polynesian-Polish woman named Barbara Jasinski. There was still, to be sure, a childlike, rebellious streak in him. He, Jasinski, and Kotke liked to go skinny dipping in Felt Lake on the edge of Interstate 280 near Stanford, and he bought a 1966 BMW R62 motorcycle that he adorned with orange tassels on the handlebars. He could also still be bratty. He belittled waitresses and frequently returned food with the proclamation that it was garbage. At the company's first Halloween party in 1979, he dressed in robes as Jesus Christ, an act of semi-ironic self-awareness that he considered funny, but that caused a lot of eye-rolling. Even his initial stirrings of domesticity had some quirks. He bought a proper house in the Los Gatos Hills, which he adorned with a Maxfield Parrish painting, a Braun coffee maker, and Henkel's knives. But because he was so obsessive when it came to selecting furnishings, it remained mostly barren, lacking beds or chairs or couches. Instead, his bedroom had a mattress in the center, frame pictures of Einstein and Maharaji on the walls, and an Apple II on the floor.